It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
It's all about hockey. This is the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show, presented by Shaws and Star Market. Download their Just For You app and save today.
With a rocket.
Also brought to you by Rodenheiser Home Services and Sports Etc. Now, Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirott, and Bob Beers.
Welcome in to another edition of the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub on a Saturday morning. It is great to be with you as we get ready for the continuation of the Bruins and Islanders series game four tonight down at Nassau Coliseum, 7:15 faceoff or thereabouts. You, of course, can hear it here on the Sports Hub with Judd Sirott and Bob Beers on the call. They will be joining us a little bit later on in the show today. But alongside, or close to it, is Billy Jaffe of Nesson. He is going to be with us for the next couple of hours via the wonders of technology. Are you in the greater Secaucus area?
No, I'm not in the greater Secaucus area. I am in Secaucus.
Well, that's pretty great.
Yes, I'm just in the great Secaucus area. In fact, my home away from home when I'm at the NHL Network. The Marriott Residence Inn. Free plug for the Marriott Residence Inn. They treat us beautifully here. There's an awesome bagel shop downstairs, which makes me happy, although heavy. And I've got my coffee ready. And late night at the NHL Network, watching the Avalanche Vegas game, a game that is on speed steroids. That's just awesome. Ready to talk hockey with you for a bit before heading back to Boston. So I am looking forward to this, and then I am looking forward to that. It's been a good week, though, here at the NHL Network.
It's been a good week all around. There's some good hockey being played and some exciting stuff, and we see another overtime game between the Bruins and the Islanders in Game 3. You kind of expected that going into this series, I think, with especially the way that the Islanders play, you know, and as good as both of these teams are, you expected that there were going to be some tight games. You know, maybe the games would be a little bit lower scoring than we saw during the Washington series. And so far, it's played out. Two of the three games going to overtime.
Yeah, it has, especially because both teams do have structure. They have distinct structure to their games. And it's not just defensive structure. Yes, team defense, incredibly important. But they have structure to their game when both teams are going pretty much on their forechecks, right? Bruins adjust their neutral zone play a little bit, bringing the puck out of their own zone. And that was made some forced some adjustments or forced the Islanders to have to change a little bit in game three. The Bruins did a beautiful job of maneuvering the puck through the neutral zone for a while in game three. And that was key. But overall, both teams do have the really good structure, and therefore, and they have players dedicated to that. And therefore, it makes for close games. It's really interesting how, you know, you look at this. All four series have a very, I would say, distinct style to them that we're seeing. Now, that is probably the result of also teams knowing each other so darn well this year, having played at least 8 times each in the North Division, 10 times each. So we're seeing that. But the Bruins Islanders, big boy hockey, I've called it that before. I'll use that term again. It's a lot of physical contact along the wall. Who's willing to pay the price there? Who's willing to get, you know, dig pucks out that much more? It's fun to watch. It is, because it's not stagnant hockey either. There has been some fun, a little bit up and down. We've seen a lot of skill, RJ, but when it's all said and done, it's about structure and it's about taking the hits to make the play. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's been that kind of aggressive, fun hockey.
Well, the biggest story coming out of game three, other than the Bruins grabbing a 2-1 lead in the series, is the loss of Brandon Carlo in that game. We don't know what his status is going to be going forward, although, you know, Bruce Cassidy, when he spoke about it after the game on Thursday night and then again yesterday, you know, is at least leaving room for some optimism. Saying that Carlo has been feeling okay. But boy, if you take him out of the lineup, it becomes a real challenge. If, you know, Kevin Miller is back and skated yesterday in Boston, he's not with the team, so he's not ready to be back in the lineup as of yet. If Carlo can't go, I mean, they're really short as far as right side D-men who have, you know, the skills and the experience that you would feel good about putting them in this situation.
Yeah, no question. You're going to, you know, I think everybody listening to us understands who's left. That means on the right side, but in case somebody doesn't, McAvoy and Clifton are your two natural right shot defensemen. So that would be Clifton jumps up to the second pair. And then you've got to make a decision on your third pair. Jeremy Lauzon has played the right side and played it actually somewhat, I'll say, regularly when he came up about a year and a half ago. And that would be my slide. That would be my move to slide him over. And then Jared Tenorti. To me, it's not even – I don't even think it's close right now, RJ, between Vakanainen and Zboril coming into the lineup. You know, inexperienced guys that – you know, Zboril we saw more of. Vakanainen we really didn't see much of this year. And I'm not saying that he's – can't do it. He needs to do it over an extended period of time before I'm throwing him into a playoff game that's played much more along the wall, or, you know, both teams wants to play below the goal line than not. And I think Tenorti, who has played very respectable, very well when he's come in and called upon, I can't imagine. And remember, he played, what was it, game five against Washington.
Right.
I just can't imagine, RJ, that he wouldn't be the one to come in. I'd be thrilled if Carlo could play. It would warm my heart because it means that he's all right. If I had money to bet on it, I don't see it happening.
It didn't it certainly didn't feel like it on Thursday. I mean, it you know, look, with the history, particularly this year that he's had, when the injury happens and you see, you know, the replay of his head bouncing off the glass, you see him struggling to get up. That doesn't feel like something you come back from in a couple of days.
From what we know now about how concussions I can't label it a concussion because I don't know if it is. The result seemed, how you said he tried to get up, seemed like that. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't. Regardless, the Bruins are very cautious, rightfully so, about something like this. The player takes precedent over the team here. There's no question. And you could tell that he, at least from my perspective, watching that happen, RJ, he was breathing through it, saying, "I know I just got hit. Mm-hmm. I know where I am. I just got to get my wits about me. I have to get my balance. I have to." You know, you could almost see him saying to himself, "Take a deep breath. Don't give off anything too much. You know, understand what's happening." But then he tried to put bring one knee up, and you could just tell that his equilibrium was off there. So, if we know anything, you know, we know that there's impact. I mean, I'm telling you obvious stuff here. Great news is, doesn't have an issue, they say, in the locker room. Was very, you know, very vocal, happy, to, you know, was good, you know, there with the teammates after and the next day feeling well. But again, to your point, it just didn't seem like that we would see him in game four. And I wouldn't blame him. I mean, I know we'd love to have him out there, but if you put a guy out there that there's any, even a half a percent of a chance of something awful happening to him with one more hit because he hasn't healed yet due to a head injury, no. Can't play him.
Look, and obviously it would be that way for every player, but it for a player as important going forward for this franchise as Carlo mm-hmm. is, right? I mean, he's a guy who you envision being one of your top four defensemen for a long time here, along with McAvoy and Grizzlick, and you know, yeah. and who knows who you know who the other fourth would be? Maybe it's Riley, maybe it's not, but or it's Lozon or you know Zaboral or whoever ends up growing into that role. But you have to consider that too, that look, you know, this guy, we've seen it with players over the years that, you know, these concussions continue to build, they become, you know, they yep. continue to become more susceptible to it. And so, you know, you can't just think about, well, we'd like to try and really get the upper hand on the Islanders here tonight. It's got to be about the longer term thinking with an injury like that.
And they will then, and you know, the Bruins won't. They won't screw around. They won't on that one with Brandon. They would do it for anybody too. It's again, it's here. This is about the player right now. And let's, I would hope to be wrong on this because it means that BC's good. I just think that it would be highly unlikely for him to play in the game. I would, you know, especially if like, well, he's doing great, but give him another day, give him 2 days, right? They don't play again until Monday. So now you've given him a couple of days with no elevated heart rate. And then, you really get a look at him come Monday if he can play in game five.
So obviously, as I said, that was the biggest, you know, the biggest news coming out of that game other than the result. But what did you think of the game overall, the first game in at Long Island in this series? And how did you think it played out? And, you know, it, obviously the Bruins get the win, but did it feel like to you in the third period that the Islanders might just, you know, they got that crowd into it. They got yeah. that first goal. Yeah. It felt like this was going to go. It was going to go the wrong way.
First of all, RJ, the Long Island police are going to come after you and issue a citation. It's not at Long Island. It's on
Long Island.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Or at the Islanders. And I'm kidding because having lived there for a bunch of years, it took me a while before I had to, you know, get that right. It's on Long Island. And I had to learn my lesson the hard way listening to them. Second of all, to your point, the Bruins, I thought, did a beautiful job of especially early on. That first goal was at 5 minutes in or so by, yep. by Craig Smith after a beautiful play by, you know, Taylor Hall and Grizzlick. I thought they did a wonderful job of mitigating the crowd. People that were at the game called it a cautious crowd early on instead of a raucous crowd because of that. And that's why the Bruins I thought did themselves a lot of favor and played very well into this game until your point about, and they said they didn't play well in the third, but the Islanders definitely got juiced in the third. They got a typical Islander goal. We'll talk about that. I know during the show at times, but you know, they slimed the puck in and I give them credit. I mean, Barzal stuck with it, right? I mean, mm-hmm. but that's what they do. They just battle it out. That's what makes them so frustrating is that they're always in it. And then they score. And then, yeah, the place was going, you know, bonkers. Islanders had chances after that. They did. They had the better chances then late in the third period after the Bruins had done well, power plays, et cetera. And then the Islanders really felt it in the overtime. What did they have? Four good chances, two high dangers, if I remember correctly, from natural stat trick, but four I would call pretty darn good chances in overtime. And Tuukka was spectacular there. Before Brad Marchand scores his goal from a near impossible angle. I liked a lot of what we saw in game three. Mm-hmm. I liked how the Bruins D-men supported breakouts, transported pucks through the neutral zone, especially for a while earlier on in the game. I liked how active they were. I thought Mike Riley's game was excellent. Grizzlick was good. McAvoy, again, beast mode, Charlie Beast mode back there. He was outstanding. I thought the guys battled hard. I mean, and the Islanders, and I know they count hits, this and that, but the Islanders or the Bruins more or less matched them hit for hit. And it's not the number of hits; it's the quality of them and the impact of where they are. But I thought the Bruins took hits, made plays, didn't get hemmed into their zone too much. I was very happy with that road game when it was all said and done.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, for most of the game, as you said, you know, kind of in that third period, late in that third period, it was when the Islanders really kind of came with the surge, right? They got,
which is scary.
Yeah, I mean, it was white knuckle time. And it's like, you get kind of get to that point. It's like, ooh, I just hope they can get it into overtime as opposed to, exactly, you know, trying to get the win in regulation. All right, we've got a lot more to talk about in the first three games of this series. Billy Jaffe is here with us. We will get to your calls coming up at 617-779-0985. We'll talk a little bit about Tuukka Rask and his performance in that game. We'll talk about Taylor Hall and what we've seen from him, not only in that game, but also throughout the course of the playoffs, and a whole lot more as we take you up until 11 o'clock. Ryan Johnston, Billy Jaffe here with you on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey.
Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline, ma.org, or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Right circle, now the slot, fires, he scores!
All things Bruins and the NHL. The Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
No and now here. Here's Hall, into the left circle, empty net, fires, and scores! Taylor Hall in the left circle. Softly fired a wrist shot just inside the near post. Bruins 5 and the Islanders 2. That'll go as a power play goal.
Back here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Go shopping, get rewards, and save at Shaws and Star Market by downloading the Just For You app. Shaws and Star Market, official partners of the Boston Bruins Radio Network. Ryan Johnston, along with Billy Jaffe this week. And you heard the capping goal of the Bruins Game 1 win at the Garden. Taylor Hall with the empty netter. Picked up that is his lone goal of the series, picked up an assist on Thursday night in the Game 3 win as well. And Billy, you know,
that seems like a year ago, by the way, that first game.
Doesn't it, though? It's a whole week ago since we saw that game at the Bruins. So little bit has happened since then.
You're playing that, you know, Tommy's playing that highlight coming out. I'm like, oh my God, what day of the week was that? When was that? You know, I can see the game. Like, I can't remember when that was. It feels like a month ago. But what a game that was. What a chills event, you know, goosebump event too, with everybody in the Garden that night.
It was huge. And look, when the Bruins got Taylor Hall at the trade deadline, we knew, or we hoped, that offensively this guy, you know, is the real deal. And if he comes in here and he and Krejci click, it's going to be something special. And it has been. I don't know that too many people really had the expectation that Taylor Hall was going to be a 200-foot player, though. And I think that's what's opening some eyes, as we've seen him over the course of a longer sample size here. And we saw it again in Game 3, where I think Beersey pointed it out last week that, you know, in the Washington series, there was a play. He made a play in the defensive zone, wheels up ice, ends up scoring down the other end. We see it again in Game 3 against the Islanders, back-checking, making good defensive plays, making plays in his own zone that lead to breakouts, that lead to good things at the other end. He's been great in that regard, and that's not something that I was necessarily expecting out of him.
He has been as hungry as I've ever seen him play. Now, look, here's a guy who's always loved scoring. You know, that's what he's done his whole hockey career, whether it's from Pee-wee to the NHL. But, and I'm not saying he didn't work hard before, but he's working with such a purpose right now to, for the benefit of the team. And then he's just, you can tell he's got that extra energy in him. You can tell he wants to show everybody how much he loves it playing with the Bruins and how much he respects the way the Bruins play. He wants to be part of it. He doesn't want to say, oh, that's awesome, and I'll do my thing. He wants to be considered. He wants to be spoken like a Bruin. You know what I mean? He doesn't want to be Taylor Hall, former so-and-so and so-and-so. He wants to be spoken as if he's been a longtime Bruin. It's indicative in his play. 15-0 were the shots in the game when he was on the ice. 15-4, none against, when he was on the ice in game three. Very just, not justifiably, appropriately rewarded with that empty net goal in game one at TD Garden for given how well he played in that game too. We have talked about it on this show. I've talked about it with Toucher and Rich on Wednesday mornings when I'm on with them, how much fun he's having. And I know sometimes fun comes off as a negative word, right? Oh, fun. It's business fun. But you need to still have fun in what you're doing. He is having so much fun that you can see it in his game. You can see it in his effort. You can see it in his determination.
Let's go to the phones here at 617-779-0985. Maria in Watertown is up first this week. Hi, Maria.
Hello, gentlemen. How's everyone doing today?
Good.
Great, thanks.
Just Billy, to your point earlier about the Bruins and Islanders playing big boy hockey, the Canadians and Jets are playing little boy hockey. What a snooze fest. That game was last night. Either one of those teams are going to get destroyed in the next round because, boy, did they look really slow compared to the other teams that are still in the playoffs right now. I just wanted to comment, too, on the Bruins defensive core the other night in the game. I was so impressed with how active they were on both sides of the puck the other night, and I know they labored a little bit late in the game after poor Brandon Carlo went down, and hopefully that was just the issue of having to play with five defensemen. But, you know, if I had my druthers, I'd put Tenorti in over any of the other younger players and just say to Tenorti, don't do anything more than you're capable of doing, my friend. That's all I had today, gentlemen, and go Bees.
All right, appreciate the call, Maria. And look, I mean, Tenorti – at least Tenorti, if they have to sub somebody in, he's got some more experience than the other guys. And I think you kind of have to lean on that at this point, right? I mean.
I would agree. And it's not like I have not had an issue with Jared Tenorti's game when he comes into the lineup for the Bruins. I mean, I understand his limitations. I get, you know, what he is, what he isn't. I guess to Maria's point, I don't even think you need to tell the guy, don't try and do something you're not. I just think he gets it, you know. He came in and played very well early on for the Bruins, getting his role. He had the injuries. He's played, I'm looking it up right now, he's played 10 career playoff games, including one in round one. So his experience to me and his size to me, it's just a factor right now. It's not that the Bruins are looking for scraps anywhere on the ice, fights, I mean, with the Islanders. You know, Islanders aren't looking for that at all. They're looking for it less than the Bruins are. A guy that can hopefully take the hits, make the play. And I've actually liked his, it wouldn't be elusiveness, his skating at times when he's played with the Bruins. And granted, it's regular season more than anything that we saw, but he showed, I found a few times regular season, good exits out of his own zone. It's just going to have to be a simple game to Maria's, you know, comment there. And assuming that it is him and assuming, RJ, that Lauzon slides to the right side, there's going to be a different look. Lauzon hasn't played the right side in a while, but, you know, cliche time, simplify, get it out, get it in, get off the ice type of stuff.
We've talked about this in the past with Steven Kampfer, especially how difficult it can be for these guys to come out of the, you know, come out of the press box and get back on, yes, the ice because they're not getting game reps. I mean, Tenorti has played one game since April 18th.
Yep.
Right. I mean, that's a, That's a long time to be just practicing and getting bag skated and not get any game reps. And so you have to worry about a little rust. But like you said earlier, you know, when he got inserted in for that one game of the Washington series, it's not like he struggled.
No, he was,
right? He was fine. And so that's why you have a guy like that on the roster. That's why we say all the time that you've got to be really deep defensively when you get to the playoffs, because we see it every single year, right? Yeah. You're going to have games and maybe even long stretches where you're going to be 2 and 3 defensemen out, and you're going to have to go 8 or 9 deep on your roster.
Well, in particular, it seems like it's a Bruins thing. They have seemed to have that happen. I can't quantify the numbers of other teams off the top of my head in front of me, but you know, I'm thinking of Tampa. They've used, I think, 70 instead of 6, but they also use 70 regularly. It just seems like the Bruins end up getting dinged up on the back end lately more. And lately, what I mean is the last couple of years in the playoffs. Tenorti's line in the game he came in, 19-02. He had 3 blocks. He had 4 hits, but he was very involved. He is going to be ecstatic to get in, not because of a teammate being injured, but because, you know, this is what he was brought in for. Like, you know, if he's successful, let's say he does come in tonight and he plays well, and, you know, let's hope that we're giving you a hypothetical that happens here. I mean, it's another, you got to tip your hat to Don Sweeney, who's had a really good in-season moves between Hall and Lazar and Riley. And you got to say, hey, it's another good move that he and his staff did, picking up, you know, off waiver Jared Tenorti. I mean, that's a, you know, because it becomes viable. You can't predict, you know, John Moore, tough year for John, really tough year. Mm. And then Kampfer had an injury that he just couldn't deal with anymore in the hand wrist area. I mean, so right there, two of your guys that we both know, right, RJ, would be in before Tenorti. I mean, how good would Steven Kampfer look right now sliding in?
Yeah,
into the lineup. It'd have been glorious, but it's not there. So you got to keep going deep into the defensive well that you've developed or that you've dug, and now you bring Jared Tenorti in again, assuming if Carlo can't play.
Billy Jaffe is with us. We will be joined as well by Bob Beers from Long Island. He is on Long Island, as we like to say, getting ready for tonight's Game 4. And we'll get his thoughts on the series thus far coming up next here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline, ma.org, or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Press the stop.
This is the Beast of the Week, presented by Toro.
Now Barzal shot it out in front. Rask the save. Dig it away. Is Pacho, and Rask has the answer in the blue paint with a paddle down. Tap it ahead. Bruins don't get it out. Everly high slot to the far circle. Shoot, Rask the save. Rebound, Rask again on Barzal. And he gloves that. Held in high slot to Brusk. Shoots, blocked, and look out here. Beauvillier sprinting out of the line. Into the slot. Clifton is back. Backhand, and Rask the save. And he holds.
Some of the huge saves made by Tuukka Rask, who becomes a rare back-to-back winner of our Beast of the Week award. Presented by the 60-volt FlexForce power system from Toro, the most powerful battery in its class, and a full line of unbeatable mowers, snowblowers, trimmers, chainsaws, and more. Interchangeable power without compromise. Visit Toro.com/FlexForce to learn more. Ryan Johnston, Billy Jaffe with you here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. And now we head out to the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline and welcome in Bob Beers from Long Island. What's going on, Beersy?
How are we doing, guys?
Doing well. Let's start with the goaltending. You know, Tuukka coming off having given up 4 goals in game 2. Boy, did he come up huge when they needed him in game 3, especially, you know, down the stretch in the third period as the Islanders are first trying to tie the game, then after they get it tied and are trying to win it in regulation. He came up with some really big saves throughout the course of that game.
He was outstanding. He was excellent in all facets, right? And he was back to kind of, well, I don't know about back to, but just he makes those saves. He makes a lot of those saves look easy just because he's squared up and he's in great position to make them. And, you know, there weren't a lot of second chances, I don't think. And I credit the Bruins and the way that they defended for that. And also the way that Rask was able to, you know, make saves and have the puck stick to him. So to speak, there was that one big one there in overtime that Barzal had a chance on a rebound off an Eberle shot. But, you know, there weren't a lot. And, you know, especially that power play late for the Islanders, thought he was excellent there. The penalty killing came up big there as well on the Sean Corrali penalty. So, no, I mean, Rask was excellent in that game, and he had to be because the other guy was good. Varlamov was fantastic down to the other end, and unfortunately for him, fortunately for the Bruins, you know, the goal gets by him there for Marchand, but he was the reason that game got to overtime in the first place.
What have
it was a legit.
Go ahead, Billy.
I was going to say it was a legit goalie duel in that game.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I loved that, and you could feel that energy through the television, and I'm sure you guys could feel it, obviously, right in the building there. It looked like a lot of fun, especially your location where you call the game from. How about the play of Jeremy Lauzon after a tough, unlucky, and at times not great game 2. I liked his bounce back in game 3. I thought he showed a lot of maturity. What did you think of his game?
I agree. Thought he was very good. He played his game. He also got shots through from the point. You know, he had a couple chances to score, actually. You know, he had a couple that Varlamov, I thought, didn't see coming in. And I remember feeling, you know, thinking as it was going on, oh, I'd love to see him score, you know, to make him really kind of completely bounce back if he hadn't already, you know, from what happened in game 2. But no, he was good. And he's going to have to be better today because everybody's got to chip in today, the way that they play. We don't know exactly what's going to happen here tonight with Carlo. If Carlo can't go, who goes? You know, my guess would be Tenorti pops in, but then who hops over the right side? And it might be Lauzon hopping over the right side, or they might really. I tend to believe if let's say hypothetically that Carlo's not going to play, and that's what happens, that Lauzon moves over. I think as the game goes on, you know, if it's close and in certain situations, I think they go with two righties and I really just ride them, you know, and they see a ton of ice time. So McAvoy, I think, can handle it. Clifton has played very well, and he's done his job. He's done it well. But then you add more ice time to it, you know, it'd be even a bigger challenge for him. So, but I do think you might see some of that here today. I think a ton of ice time for McAvoy and then kind of figure it out from there. They're not going to move Grizzlick over. They like McAvoy and Grizzlick together. So I think Lauzon becomes the candidate to move over to the right side, but maybe not in all situations.
From a defenseman standpoint, can you just talk about the challenges that would come from having to shift over to that opposite side? And, you know, it's not only different perspective, but obviously if you're making plays at, you know, the offensive blue line, it's a different, you know, different techniques and all of that. How difficult is it, especially for guys who don't do that on a regular basis?
Yeah, I mean, I played with, you know, you when you play with Bork, and he was the lefty who played the right side, and he liked playing the right side exclusively. You know, he just that's where, you know, he felt he was most effective, and he enjoyed playing. There's different angles, you know, there's different ways you have to take the puck off the wall. You know, if you're a lefty playing the right side, you know, you're actually on your forehand when you get the puck, you know, maybe from behind the net, and then you can get faced up ice. You know, at that offensive blue line, like you were talking about, it sometimes you might have to take the puck off the wall on your backhand if it's passed up. You know, a lot of times you try to make that pass up the wall so it's not right on the wall, right? Not right on the boards. If the forward's making a pass back, it's a bank pass so that it comes out and it's a lot easier to handle. But if it's right along the boards, it's a little bit harder to handle, even for a righty over there, you know, or you know, even for a righty on that side. Because if it's a bouncing puck, you got to be able to stop it and play it right away under some pressure. You know, you expect to see that pressure. So there's some differences in the angles you take the puck when you have it. You know, are you facing the middle of the ice, or are you facing up the strong side? So there's some different looks that you have to get used to. You know, if they do it today, we'll know more at the morning skate. You know, who's going to go over there, but it's not impossible. It's not something that's impossible. And then the other thing about it too is, and the one thing I found when I had to move over to the left side and play, because I was a righty, the pivots. You know, you're so accustomed to pivoting one direction all the time. You know, so when you move over to the other side, you might. It's not like you can't do it. But you got Matt Barzal or somebody flying down that wing. You got to be able to pivot and get to them and take the angle properly. So there are some differences, no doubt, but certainly not impossible.
You know, I know, RJ, everybody knows, if a guy like him does slide over to the right side, it's going to be on the board in the aisles, you know, pre-scout, attack that guy. You know what? Yes. It's going to be a challenge, but he did it in the past. And so I got to, you know, hopefully he can re-educate himself.
He's never done, right?
Right. So just one nugget here on Clifton. He's played the highest ice time he's played in this playoffs so far is 23:09. That came in the game 3 against the Caps, that overtime game where that was the Smith goal, where the wraparound. So Cliffy's always up for a challenge too. You know, that's what makes the kid so wonderful. I think I agree with you, Bobby, that we're going to see a lot of situational right shot guys being put out there back and forth, as Bruce Cassidy likes to say, toggled in and out. Question for you about the forward lines, Beersy, could you see a Carson Kuhlman coming in for a player in this game? Was there enough, you know, at times, you know, the fourth line played more ice time than the third line in game three there. Could you see something like that happening, or do you think Butch and his staff stay with the same lineup?
Well, I think it's a possibility. Coyle's been excellent. Yes. I think he's been very good in this series. I'd like to see maybe a little bit more from Richie. He had a great chance in that last game, right in the slot there where Varlamov stopped him. I thought the brush was okay in that game. You know, he had one ill-advised shot attempt there from the point where he rotated back, tried to get a shot through, it got blocked, and yep. And that was one of Beauvilliers' break-ins, I believe. So there's room for improvement, no question, but does it come from within or does it come from Kuhlman? I wouldn't rule it out. Certainly wouldn't rule it out, because I know that when Kuhlman comes in, he gives him a really good burst of energy. You know, DeBrusk is playing his off wing, and I don't think it's his most effective spot, but he's the most logical guy to go over there right now. So does that hurt that line? Maybe once in a while it does, but I did think he was okay last game. So maybe a little bit more from the wingers, but I think their centerman, Coyle, has been very good.
We were talking a little bit before you came on, Bob, about the physicality of the series so far, and how do you think that the Bruins have handled the approach of the Islanders, who, you know, like to get after you a little bit, like to smother you, and how do you feel like the Bruins have handled that?
Well, they're up 2-1.
Yeah.
So I don't mind it at all. I mean, obviously, Carlo's injury notwithstanding, it's just, you know, unfortunate play. That was a good hit by Clutterbuck. It was a good forecheck. I think it was kind of a perfect storm. I don't think Carlo had any, you know, I watched it, you know, when I watched the replays, I didn't think there was much else he could do. And, you know, Clutterbuck just, he had the perfect angle on him. So unfortunate event, but they're trying to be physical. They're trying to be physical, certainly against the top line. You know, there was a lot made of Pageau's line playing against them. And, you know, but I give a lot of credit to Pelech and Pulock, but and the way that they've played. I mean, they've been physical on that back end. Pelech took a pretty healthy run at Pastrnak. I love that McAvoy stepped up in the neutral zone when all that was starting to kind of go down and they were trying to be physical. I don't think that there's a lot of guys that are intimidated by it, though. You know what I mean? So I think they've handled it very well. And you know, when you watch it, and where we watch it from the other day was just a great vantage point in game three, and you could see the physicality. But, you know, as a player, like, if you know the hit's coming and you're along the wall, it's not, to me, it's not that big of a deal. You just brace yourself for it. And it's not a, you know, it makes a lot of noise and the fans go crazy. That's great. And that's part of the game. And you try to wear guys down because of it. But I never really felt like I got worn down during those plays. You know what I'm saying? It's more like when you have to continually go back for pucks. And that's what the Islanders will try to wear you down on, right? Get the puck behind the D and then work them down low. And that type of game will wear you down, where you're battling along the wall and you're always in your own zone. And like, I think that kind of has more of an effect than maybe the physical play. It is part of their game plan. It's part of their DNA, and they're going to continue to do it. That's fine. But I think that I don't see the Bruins, any of the players, being intimidated by it. If that kind of answers your question.
Let's touch on the overtime winning goal. That I'm not any good at math. Would that be geometry, you know, or angles or whatever? I don't even know which one that was. But if you gave Brad Marchand, you think 10 more pucks, Beersy, from that angle, at that, you think he'd be able to hit that corner from that shot? I mean, it was spectacular. It was crazy. I loved his attitude of just getting it, jumping off the bench, obviously, and getting it going. But in your opinion, was he shooting to score, or was he shooting, do you think, just to, you know, knowing that Bergeron was coming down center drive and look for a rebound type opportunity?
Well, I think if he was shooting for a rebound, it would have been lower, you know, on the pads. So, and maybe it just got away from him. I don't know. It looked like it might have gone up on edge a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't put anything past Marshy. As far as how many times he could do that, he's proven it time and time again. He's pretty darn good. So, it was a bad goal by Varlamov. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It didn't get deflected. You know, maybe it knuckled. It looked like he was, when you watch it over again, you know, it looked like he was a little outside the post. He kind of waved at it a little bit with his glove, but yeah, I would, you know, and I saw the Bruins do that a few times during the game where they put pucks on his pads looking for rebounds and they got them.
Yep.
So, I think if he was looking for a shot for a rebound, it would have been there, but who knows? Maybe, like I said, maybe it looked like it might have gone up on edge. It was really kind of hard to tell. He was so deep, and you know, he had his Pageau chasing him down the wall and you know, pushing him down low, and you had a defenseman. I think it was Pulak that was on the right side there. So he was closing on him as well. And hey, we'll take it, right? We'll take it any way that it happens. But Varlamov, for such a fantastic game, and I think he just missed that one.
It's that old adage, right? That there's no bad shots in overtime. You get the puck on the net when you get the opportunity. And even from an impossible angle, sometimes it goes in.
Yeah. And there's a school of thought out there from some people that I've heard from over the last couple of days, just listening, and that think that the Bruins will target the glove side purposely, because, you know, he's allowed some goals on the glove side. He's not somebody that is really clean at catching the puck. You know, he kind of stabs at it a little bit. I think that was Marty Biron that was talking about that. Maybe Razor's talked about it as well, Billy. I'm not sure. I haven't talked to him, but you know, that there is some theory out there that the Bruins will try to continue to target that glove side. That's where Craig Smith scored as well.
Yeah, as they should. We all love the way that both goalies played. I thought Varlamov was excellent, but he did give up rebounds. Not as many as Sorokin, however.
Sorokin gave up a ton.
A ton, right. Before we let you go, you know, I talked to somebody who was there from a different perspective, covering the game, and he said, you know, it was great, but the audience, the crowd was cautious for a while, given the Bruins did so well early on. Just what was it like for you? Because it's so much is made of the old barn. I spent many years there too. 12,000 people there is basically a sellout. It only seats like 13, I think 8 now for hockey, something, whatever it is. And was it everything that people were, you know, the Islanders were going to make it out to? Is that was an ultimate home ice advantage? Obviously the Bruins and their leadership didn't seem to faze them too much.
No. I mean, when I played there, it was, you know, the Islander Ranger games were fantastic. You know, that was the best. Those were the best ones.
Half Ranger fans. Right.
Yeah. Well, but You know, and it wasn't that long ago when we would come down here to do a game on, you know, for, you know, to cover the game on the radio, and it was, there were tons of Bruins fans. You know, now that the Islanders have turned good, have gotten much better than they were, it was great. It was a really good atmosphere. They were really into it. I think as the game wore on, the situation where they were behind and they were getting a little nervous, they got a little louder maybe. Maybe it was how much they were being served. I'm not sure. But they were into it, and we were right in the middle of them. So it was pretty funny, actually, at times, kind of listening to some of the stuff that was said. I mean, they were on their feet every time an Islander got touched, and it was a great atmosphere. And I think that I think visiting teams feed off that. In fact, I know that they do. They love it too. You know, they love the, you know, us against the world mentality when you come into a, you know, difficult building. So as much as it's a big factor for the home team, and it is. I mean, I think that especially veteran teams are really capable of handling that and feed off of it and thrive off of it.
Bob Beers, you can hear he and Judd Surratt tonight on the call here on 98.5. The Sports Hub pregame gets underway at 6:30 for the 7:15-ish faceoff. Bearsy, appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your time down on the island.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you.
He's joining us, of course, on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. We got Billy Jaffe with us until 11 o'clock today. We'll get back to your calls coming up at 617-779-0985. We're going to check in with Judd Surratt as well from down on Long Island to kick off hour number two of the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show coming up.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Win it 2-1 in overtime, and they take a 2-1 lead in this series over the Isles.
Brad Marchand's Game 3 game winner in overtime down at Nassau Coliseum on Thursday night. So we welcome you back for hour number two of the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Billy Jaffe with you. And now happy to be joined by the man who made that call. That is Judd Surratt joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Morning, Judd.
Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline, ma.org, or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.